Zori's mother wore a simple blue dress and no jewelry.
Zori, I don't blame you.
I blame myself. I should have seen. I should have known.
And then he would have hurt you. Zori, you were a tiny child. It was better as it was.
I can't believe that. You were hurt.
You don't want to believe that. Zori, listen to me. This was not the worst life. And you can have a better one. Maybe with Toby, maybe with someone else. You deserve it.
And what about you? I should take care of you.
No. I am an adult. It's my job to take care of myself. I'll be fine.
You won't. What will you do?
For one thing, I won't let you run my life. Zori, relax. Please. It's true that my family are angry with me right now. And they don't want me back home. Back on planet. But I still have some resources. I can get by. And you'll finish school.
You should move in here. Stella would let you...
No. You should move in with me. Not because I want to keep you away from Toby. He is indeed a very nice boy, quite suitable. But because you and I are a family, all we have left of what we had. Yet we don't know each other all that well, and we need to.
Would we go back to the house?
No, never. That life is over. I've had all your things moved into storage. We can rent an apartment.
Zori didn't want to move. She wanted to stay near Toby forever. She liked Stella. But it was hard, too, living in the same apartment, and yet not ever doing any of the things they weren't supposed to do. And Stella probably wanted her to move out.
I won't force you, Zori, but I think it would help you. And me.
I think so, too.
Zori reached out, and her mother was there, holding her. Stella, at the office, stared at her comm unit and bit her lip. Zori was talking to her mother. She, Stella, was not talking to her own mother. She had to. She knew she had to. The white-hot rage she'd felt when she'd first learned of her true parentage had long since died down to a sullen glow. But that still left the dilemma.
How honest can I be with a woman who wasn't honest with me?
She no longer wanted to hurt Helen. But healing the breach between them would require honesty from both of them. Stella wasn't sure Helen could stand that. She checked the time zone for Vata headquarters on Slaughter Key. Early evening now. Helen might be out to dinner, or shopping, or... home. She could not let Zori outdo her in courage. She opened a circuit to the system Ansible and placed the call. As the work on Vanguard neared completion, Kai's days grew ever busier. She needed to be in at least three places at once. She wanted to get the ships that were spaceworthy into training. She had to be available for conferences with Moray and Moscow government officials. And she was sure that the Admiral's presence would speed work on Vanguard. Argelos and Pettigrew, because they had been in combat using the shipboard Ansibles, took over much of the training. Kai had daily reports and logged in by Ansible whenever she could, but she knew she needed experience in commanding from the CCC. Yet she could not spare the time to be ferried to and from the dockyard to sit in the command seat while the others worked on their assignments. Finally, Vanguard came back to Cascadia. Kai moved her gear back aboard. Her formerly spacious quarters were now the size of the captain's cabin on Gary Tobai, but she didn't care about that. She wanted to run an exercise from the CCC as soon as possible. Though Turek had not sent another broadcast, she knew his next attack could not be far away. Kai turned to her assembled captains, some on Cascadia Station and some attending by Ansible.
Those ships at Moray will be within days of completion by the time we can get there. We can't afford more than 2 days of exercises. They'll be intense. We can sleep in FTL.
There was no real resistance. In the presence of Cascadian ships and officers, the privateers had become competitive ship handlers, determined to show that privateers weren't sloppy merchanters. She passed out the updated information she had on Moray's own defense system, the basic tactics used, the contact codes they'd been given. Moray Defense used clusters. Two maniples per cluster, a cluster per sector, scattered around the system, and dependent on the system Ansible for rapid communication. Moscow's given us the entire Sector 12 to play in. We'll rendezvous there at 1800.
Today?
It was 1400.
Today.
Dismissed. She was as exhausted as the others when she finally gave the order to form up for the jump to Moray System. But in those 2 days, she had come to feel that the 46 ships under her command were functioning as a fighting unit, even the transports. Moray's last report before they entered FTL was that construction proceeded normally and no threat showed.
A lot can happen in 20 days.
We're as ready as we can be. Lozar Pitanji, assembler third on the second shift of number 30 dock, headed home at the end of the shift with nothing more on his mind than whether Jari, his wife, had brought home a fish for the betrothal feast. Though he would never rise above assembler third, as a devout Miznarii, he refused to consider a cranial implant, and more senior grades at Moray's Tebedos Yards required implants, he had a comfortable life, especially now that ship orders were up. Besides, he had that small but very welcome stipend from the faithful, making the betrothal feast possible. And for nothing, really. For nothing but attaching a few tiny data dots to each ship he worked on.
It is nothing harmful. It will only tell Miznarii, who have a little reader, that this ship was partly built by Miznarii. That's all. You can see for yourself.
Yes, Ahmad.
Lozar had taken the reader he was offered and passed it over the dot, and the message came up. The quotation from the book that ordered the people to use their own brains and not partake of machinery. And the words, "This vessel contains work made by the mind and hand of true humans, the faithful." So Lozar had attached many such dots to the ships he'd worked on without anyone noticing. One near the main hatch, one near the bridge. Yes, it was against the rules to attach any extraneous materials to the ship, but he didn't see what harm it could do. Even if the infidels had readers and found the dots, even if they determined who had placed them, his conscience was clear.
Hey, Lozar, wait up!
Lozar glanced back. Jari and David, both on his shift but non-Miznarii, were almost jogging toward him. Though they were senior, thanks to their disgusting implants, he had come to consider them friends.
Didn't I hear you say your daughter's betrothal dinner was tonight?
David patted Lozar's shoulder.
Man, you can't face something like that right after work. Come on, we'll stand you around at the rigger's friend. At least we can do.
But Jari told me to come straight home.
Ah, wives always do. Betcha she doesn't really expect it, though. Mine never did. You're facing the in-laws, right? You need a little fortification. Jari doesn't really want you around when she's putting the final touches to the dinner. What time to start, anyway?
2000. Later than usual, because it's formal.
David hung an arm across Lozar's shoulders.
Then you have plenty of time. And I promise we'll see you get home in time to change and all that.
Despite David's assurance, Lozar left the rigger's friend so late that he had to take the shorter way back through the service corridor. Not strictly legal. And Jari glared when he came in. She was not nearly as annoyed as the substitute candy salesman at the cart parked in D-Ring, Corridor 34, on the direct route between Lozar's worksite and his apartment, the route he took almost every night.